Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Welcome to a beautiful day in the Pacific Northwest. If you're here, we deserve, you know what? We deserve sun, okay? Coming up on the show today, wow, I continue to find out a bunch of things about myself on Twitter that I just never knew. Well, now I know. The Twitter audience is just educating me on myself every single day. So we'll talk about that. I'm going to revisit our clips from our Andrew Yang interview that we didn't play for you yesterday because I want you to hear specifically something he had to say about his experience running alongside our governor, Jay Inslee, in the 2020 presidential race. Later on, can we stop attributing political opinions and positions to Jesus? Leave Jesus out of it, okay? And that goes for Republicans and Democrats. We'll also check in on the situation at the southern border as we await the expiration of Title 42, which is going to create even worse of a crisis than the crisis that already exists. Nicole, hello.
Hey, Brandy.
You didn't expect that,
right? I didn't expect that. Sorry.
Threw you on early.
Stuff. Yeah.
That's all right. I'm going to get to it in a moment, but do you envy my Twitter feuds and my Twitter drama?
Gosh. No. Twitter is so toxic.
It's so bad. Sometimes I'm like, toxic. I should delete Twitter, but then certain days I'm feeling feisty and I'm like, no, I'm going to engage.
I do like that we have the freedom to call it out, right? Without any concern over being canceled, call out the crazy.
Yeah, the only way I could be canceled, I guess, is if every platform deplatformed me. Like Facebook, YouTube, but then I could just start my own platform.
There you go.
I guess the only way I could be canceled is if all of you decide to stop subscribing.
Right, but that's the thing is that nothing that you say is obnoxious or is not correct.
Oh, thank you. Hey, I'm not always
right.
You know the line.
I mean, I feel like you know the line. It's people decide that the line is in different places, but we know the real line. So
We know the real line.
Listeners know.
Well, I'll get into that drama. It's why the title of this episode is Oops, I Did It Again, because apparently I was racist again, according to Twitterati. But before that, I just want to alert people to something happening at 2 p.m. today, because it is an update to a story we've covered extensively this year, and that is that Governor Jay Inslee is going to sign Senate Bill 5599. And that is the bill that allows a child of any age to run away to a shelter, say they're there for protected health care, and then their parents are not notified of their location, which I think is incredibly dangerous. It continues the interference of the government in the home and the government essentially saying that they are a better parent than you. So anyway, I know that there are folks trying to call the governor's office last minute, but he's going to sign this thing. It's unfortunate. I will say later on, I think probably next week we'll end up airing the interview, but State Senator Joe Wynn, who was a key co-sponsor of Senate Bill 5599, we've had him on the show before. He is going to come in and talk about that and other issues with me, so I look forward to it. But just wanted you guys to know that the governor is going to sign that at 2 p.m. today. So we'll probably have a little bit of an update on that on the live show tomorrow as to what was said at the bill signing. And then again, I think we need to revisit the slippery slope that this opens the state up to. If they can say essentially that not supporting certain types of gender care or abortion care for your child is, you know, the same as abuse, then what else can the government do? So we'll discuss that tomorrow after the bill officially is signed into law. All right. I have found out a lot about myself just by reading Twitter. Who knew it was such a wealth of knowledge for who I am as a human being? You know, when I look in the mirror in the morning, I don't think to myself, Brandy, what do you think about yourself today? Do you think you're a good person? Do you think you're kind? No, I look in the mirror and I think to myself, what does Twitter have to say about you? Because Twitter's always right. And I found out on Twitter today that not only am I a racist, but I am also responsible for some of the nation's worst mass shootings. So you might recall that on the show yesterday, we were talking about how State Senator Maka Dingra is running for attorney general. And I think that is worse than the prospect of Bob Ferguson becoming governor, because she has shown a true disdain for law and order. And so the idea that she would be the state's chief law enforcer is horrific to me. And I used what I thought was the most apt comparison that the most people would understand. And I said, it's a it's like Shama Sawant being the attorney general. Shama Sawant, a socialist on the Seattle City Council, who again has a disdain for law enforcement, the rule of law. Certainly, Senator Monica Dhingra hasn't been as vocal in saying some of the things that Shama Sawant has, but I think the effect would be the same in terms of their approach to the criminal justice system. Well, I found out that that is racist because they're both Indian, and I can't compare the two. There was a tweet from State Representative Yasmin Trudeau, who is like a progressive lawmaker, and she quote tweeted me and said, "This comparison is not just disrespectful, it's racist and dangerous." So not only am I racist, but I'm also dangerous. And one woman on Twitter told me, it's just a random person, but I had to pluck it because I thought it was worth noting. In response to me comparing Monica Dhingra and Shama Sawant, I was told, "When white supremacists are emboldened by language like yours, we get Buffalo, Uvalde, Tree of Life, Allen, Texas, people die, it's never okay, do better." So because I compared two politicians who have similar views on public safety, I'm racist because they happen to have the same skin pigmentation, which I'm going to take issue with because I've been called Seattle's Ann Coulter. She's white, so comparing me to another white woman is racist. Now, before I'm going to try to please Twitter today, and I'm going to give you five reasons why Monica Dhingra is unfit to be attorney general that no one on Twitter can claim are racist. So I'll get to that in a moment. But I had a state lawmaker, a state senator who isn't white, I won't use their name because I didn't say I was going to talk about it on the show, who sent me a text and explained why that could be considered racist by some, because apparently it's like this trope that, oh, like, brown person scary, so this brown person scary. But that's ridiculous. We talk about it all the time on the show. Like, you should be able to criticize someone. I feel like the default when you criticize someone of color is, oh, you're racist. And that's how they get around, like, you not criticizing them. So I was thinking about who else I could compare Monica Dhingra to who isn't the same race. And then, unfortunately, the first thing that popped to my head was Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal. So I can't use that comparison, even though their politics are very similar. So I've settled on Lisa Herbold, Seattle City Councilwoman Lisa Herbold, who somehow is the chair of the Public Safety Committee for the City Council, even though she doesn't care at all about public safety. And so since Senator Monica Dhingra is chair of Law and Justice, well, that's a pretty good comparison. And Lisa Herbold's white. So certainly that's okay, right? I was going to do Lorena Gonzalez, but then I'm like, Lorena's Hispanic. And I'm like, is that okay? I don't know if that's all right. So I picked a white person. You know who else I could use? Nicole Thomas Kennedy, the police abolitionist. Now, has Monica Dhingra called cops serial killers? No, but I think they both have the same fondness for taking it easy on criminals and ne'er-do-wells. But anyway, for the sake of not angering Twitter, I'll say that electing Monica Dhingra as attorney general would be just as bad as putting Lisa Herbold in that position. Although, I use Shama Sawant, Nicole, because most people know who she is.
Yeah, I think it was a fair, you think more people know than know Monica. So I think that's a fair.
Right. Everybody knows what Shama Sawant stands for. If I say Lisa Herbold, although it's safe because she's white, people are right. Like, who?
Not extreme enough.
Not extreme enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Then Nicole Thomas Kennedy is a pretty good one.
Yeah. And is she safe. Like crazier? Yeah. She's said crazier stuff, but I think that the effect would be basically the same.
Well, and again, I just think more people know Swant, so.
Exactly. Wrestle with it. I'm not going to promise not to use the Swant comparison again, okay? I'm not going to promise because it is an effective one, but noted Twitter. So like I said, in the interest of giving a rationale for why Monica Dhingra would be a dangerous attorney general, I've come up with five reasons why she is ill-suited for the job that the internet cannot blame on racism. So the first one is the police pursuit bill. So Monica Dhingra single-handedly killed a bipartisan fix to the state's horrible police pursued policy that they passed in 2021. And she basically said, nope, I don't think we need to fix the law, and I'm going to bottle this up in committee. And then she had the nerve to blame anyone who had concerns about the existing policy and what it has done to law and order on our streets. She had the nerve to say that to chalk their anger up to just emotion, runaway emotion.
I do not have the vehicle pursuit bill scheduled in the Senate, and I'll see what the House feels like sending over to me. I think this policy has become so politicized that people are no longer looking at data or best practices. They're having an emotional reaction to it.
Yeah. So reason one, number one, why Monica Dhingra is ill-suited to be attorney general is she believes that anyone who doesn't agree with her policy prescriptions is simply having an emotional reaction or a breakdown, or maybe it's that time of the month. I don't know, according to Monica Dhingra, but we're all just emotional over it. Now, reason number two why she's ill-suited for the job of Washington State's attorney general is she claims to care a lot about data, but is actually very picky when it comes to which data she will put forth and which data she will not put forth. But just as a reminder, Dhingra talks a lot about data on the floor of the Senate.
I always love hearing statistics and data being used on the floor because I think it's really important for us to be data-driven. It's very important that we actually have our facts straight when dealing with such important issues.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. And if Monica Dhingra was always looking for solid, reliable data to build her policy proposals off of, I would be like, you go. I love irrefutable data. The problem is that when it came to the police pursuit bill, Monica Dhingra was using faulty data to try to prop up the existing law and act like, oh, we are saving lives. In fact, the data she was using was so suspect that a member of her own party, a fellow Democrat, reached out to an independent expert, an expert in law enforcement statistical analysis, and asked them to review the data that Monica Dhingra was using to claim that their broken police pursuit policy was actually changing lives. And he determined that the data was so faulty that the data Monica Dhingra was using lacks sufficient methodological rigor to draw any valid and reliable conclusions. So now look, you know, maybe Monica Dhingra had just been fooled by this data set she was using and she'd come out and acknowledge her mistake. Of course not. Monica Dhingra continued to rely on that same faulty data even after an independent expert had said that in no universe should it be used to influence policymaking. So here you have someone who claims over and over in nearly every floor speech that she gives that she values data and she wants to do everything by looking at issues through the data. But then when she is shown, when it's proven, the data she's relying on to justify a failed police pursuit policy was so broken and incomplete that it shouldn't be used for anything, she clung to it, because that data proved the point she was trying to make. So in that sense, she can't be trusted to actually do things based on data, although she'll claim that she's doing it based on data. Now, the third reason why Senator Monica Dhingra is not equipped to be the Attorney General of Washington State is because, and I think this is something that both sides can agree on, whether you support her approach to criminal justice reform or not, is because you really don't know on any given day what kind of flip-flopping Monica Dhingra is going to do. And here's why. When the police pursuit bill, a version of it, finally came up for a vote on the floor of the Senate, Monica Dhingra stood up, she pushed back against every amendment to try to make it better, and said that she really does not believe that the legislature needed to pass a pursuit fix.
A chase escalates what is already happening. It is not a de-escalation situation. There are other ways, safer ways, when this can be done.
So that makes sense. You know, she fought against the pursuit bill the entire legislative session. Why would she then stand on the floor of the Senate and talk about how she supports it when it was going up for a vote? Except just a few minutes later, when it did ultimately go up for a vote, here's how Senator Dhingra voted.
Senator Dhingra, how do you vote? Senator Dhingra votes aye.
Huh. So the woman who ruined our chances at getting a really strong bipartisan fix for police pursuits refused to give it a hearing, spent every opportunity she could advocating against it, And even the day it went for a vote on the floor of the Senate, advocated against it, turned around a few minutes later and voted for it. And why did she do that? It's because she knew she was going to run for attorney general. And she wants to be able to tell you, the voters, that she supported a police pursuit fix, even though, as any of you watching this podcast know, she did everything she could to try to make sure that no such fix passed. And why I say that that should bother you, even if you believe in Monica Dingra's approach to police pursuits and approach to criminal justice reform, at the end of the day, she caved and took a political vote so that she could use it in a campaign cycle. So is that really what you want? Someone who can't stick to their guns? All right, reason number four that Monica Dingra, there's only five, I promise. Reason number four that Monica Dingra should not be the next Attorney General of Washington. Monica Dingra thinks that drugs should be decriminalized. And I don't have to tell you the extent of the drug crisis unfolding on our streets.
You are actually making their situation worse. You're actually making it worse for public safety because now they truly have hit rock bottom because anything they had before is now completely gone. This is extremely counterproductive to any data or evidence-based information we have on how to deal with addiction. Turns out, when you release someone from a jail prison setting, their chances of overdosing at that point in time are extremely high. So what you accomplish when you mandate jail time is an increase in overdose deaths. After longer than 30 days, they no longer have access to the housing, and their benefits have been cut off.
So let's try to understand this for a second. Someone who is killing themselves by injecting or inhaling an illegal substance, their lives would actually be made worse by jail. They'd actually be more likely to overdose if they have to go to jail. Let me tell you, Senator Dingra, I think their lives are already pretty bad. And the worst thing that could happen to them is that they would die. And so we don't need someone who believes in the de facto legalization of hard drugs to be our state's chief law enforcer. And finally, the number five reason why Senator Monica Dingra should not be the next attorney general that has nothing to do with the color of her skin, Twitter, is that she has no regard for the Constitution. Now, it'll come as a surprise to no one that Senator Monica Dingra voted for the assault weapon ban. And look, I think there is a constitutional argument to be made against it. I have advocated for instead, if people are so passionate about it, trying to go about the process of changing the Constitution, but I digress. Now, not only did she pass a law and a ban that is constitutionally questionable, but she actually voted against an amendment that would have simply said that we need to wait for that ban to go into effect until some ongoing cases about the constitutionality of such bans work their way through the courts.
Why spend all the money, all the litigation costs, all that on a challenge to this law, which certainly will come, I'm quite convinced, very quickly, if indeed it is passed and signed by the governor. So I think this is a taxpayer-friendly amendment, and one that makes reasonable sense given the direction that the courts seem to be going, and especially given the decision by our U.S. Supreme Court in the Bruin case.
So I'm going to ask for a no vote because we do not need to abdicate our legislative responsibilities to the uncertainties of the judicial system. Thank you.
And that should scare the heck out of anyone who values the Constitution, that you have someone who, by her own admission, does not care if the bills they're passing are constitutionally sound, does not care if they go into effect and are later overturned on constitutional grounds. That person wants to be the next Attorney General of Washington State. And to that I say, hard pass. And no, Twitter, it has nothing to do with the color of her skin. All right. I feel better that I got that off my chest. Bring it, Twitter. Okay. Whatever you have to say about me, it's been said before. But I do look forward to, I'll have Joe Wynn in on Thursday. I think we'll air his interview next week. I'll ask Senator Joe Wynn to take me through the ins and outs of what I can say and what I can't say without being called racist. Not that I'm going to put that into practice. But hey, you know what? And I just thought of this because I was thinking about Senator Dingra and like how I compared her to Shama Sawant and her politics are similar to Pramila Jayapal. I'm like, oh my God, I can't use any of those comparisons because of the color of their skin. But you know what? You've got some strong Indian American women in positions of power. And so the more that politics is diversified, it's going to be harder and harder not to draw comparisons between two lawmakers who have the same color skin. And also, I'm going to be watching to make sure that you're not comparing any white lawmakers to one another, because that would be offensive. And so I'm going to keep track. All right. Anyway, are you in the market to sell your home? Why don't you visit sellwithwest.com, sellwithwest.com, and check out one of our newest sponsors to the podcast, Wes Jones, who's been doing this for a really long time in the greater King County area. They have an innovative marketing strategy to get the most possible eyeballs on your listing, to get you the highest possible price with the fewest contingencies. I asked Wes Jones what he would say to people who might be hesitant to put their house on the market at the current time.
What I know right now is that today it's a pretty solid time. If you are listed on the market, you are likely to be one of the only homes for sale in your neighborhood. And that is a fantastic position to be in. Where are we at in 3 or 4 months? Well, if interest rates go up, buyers have less purchasing power and homes will probably take longer, which means that you will likely be competing against more of your neighbors.
And the bottom line is Wes Jones will give you the best possible advice for your situation. He wants to make sure that you get the highest price for your home as well. So visit sellwithwest.com. That's sellwithwest.com. You can also find a handy little calculator at sellwithwest.com that'll tell you what your home value is. It might be higher than you think. Sellwithwest.com, a better way to sell your home. Can we just leave Jesus out of things? Let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. Always disliked Jesus being brought into political conversations. There is no place in American politics in the way that our system is created in the separation of church and state for you to bring your personal political beliefs into the process of policymaking. I feel that way about abortion. I think you can have and do have members of Congress and other politicians who have very firmly held beliefs because of their religious background. And that's fine. I'm fine if people have deeply held religious beliefs as long as they are not using those beliefs to craft public policy for a country of people who might not share your political beliefs. I think it's really silly, which is why I was not surprised, but a little grossed out to hear Senator Clara McCaskill, a Democrat, talking about this latest shooting in Texas, the one that happened at the Outlet Mall, and talking about what Jesus might think about it.
You know, it's interesting. One of my grandchildren had his first communion over the weekend, and I listened to the homily at that service, and I was reminded about what a peaceful man Jesus was. And I listened to that elected representative, and they always want to say, oh, well, let's not make it political after there's a slaughter of innocents. But this is in its essence political. And I will tell you this, I believe very firmly that Jesus would be shocked at what our country is allowing to happen. There is no way that he would embrace everyone walking around with weapons of war.
Yeah, and I think if we're going to pontificate about what the late Jesus Christ might be thinking about the state of America, I think it's fair to say, Senator, that he would also probably be shocked about your stance on abortion. He also probably would not embrace your party's stance on abortion, which, again, I've been clear of where I stand on that issue. I don't think the government has a place in that. But when you use Jesus to try to make a point about something like guns, then you have to be aware of the fact that that exact argument can be used against you for policies that you currently endorse. So to me, I don't think it's too much to ask just to leave Jesus out of it, or not to pretend that you know what Jesus would think about something that's happening in the United States of America or in our political system. Absolutely unbelievable. All right. I want to get back to, I just skipped over this earlier, but I want to get back to Andrew Yang. Are we going to do attempt number two on Andrew Yang? So we were going to play the Andrew Yang soundbites yesterday, but we had an issue, okay? But we don't have an issue today. We're doing great. So I had Andrew Yang on Sundays with Subscribers this past Sunday, and he's just an interesting guy. And I had people in my comments being like, he's like a far leftist. He supports universal basic income. Yeah, I don't agree with Andrew Yang on a whole lot politically, but what he's doing right now and trying to start a third party called the Forward Party really doesn't have anything to do with policy. It has to do with trying to disrupt the status quo of the two-party system, but also try to offer alternatives in places like Seattle, where there's essentially one-party rule across the board, and we have all these deep crises that are just never going to get fixed. So here's part of my conversation with Andrew Yang from our Sunday Subscriber show about what's happening in Seattle and how he believes the Forward Party could help fix it.
I do want to talk about what's happening in Seattle as an example. And by the way, it's not unusual. So I was just in California. And you'd love this, given the name of your podcast, but we teamed up with the Common Sense Party of California. Yeah. That's trying to create an alternative there to the Democratic Party. If you're here in Washington State, it's a blue state. Certainly Seattle's a one-party city. And so the Democrats can screw things up in Seattle, and there is no chance that they're going to lose power to the other party.
Correct.
And so what they do is they play within their own circles. What is the first thing you hear or see in the press when there's an open position? Who's next in line?
Yeah.
There's like this churn and this hierarchy, and things can fall apart. You can have homelessness and substance abuse problems or public safety problems, and the Democratic Party does not have any meaningful competition. So here in Washington, what we're saying is, look, join the Forward Party of Washington, and then your downside is that we actually create some competitive pressure on the Democrats to get things done and deliver. That's a win. Your upside is we actually get leaders into office who owe nothing except to the people who helped get them elected. And that's an enormous win. But running a Republican in a place like Seattle is a total waste of time.
We have a Republican city attorney. She was a Republican for like 10 minutes when she got elected. But we do have one. It was a very historic occasion.
Yeah. And the game that's being played against all of us, and it's one reason why I value your work so much, Brandy, is that we're being played. We're being coded and conditioned where it's like, hey, you have an R next to your name. Oh, you're a terrible human in these ways. Like, oh, you're a D next to your name. Then that means you're, an idiot in these ways. And so if someone runs in Washington for city council, mayor, school board, whatever, and it's Forward Party, no one knows what the hell that means, you know? And so, you know what they'll have to do? They'll have to be like, maybe I have to listen to this person. Maybe I have to go to their website. Maybe I have to see what they're about. And if they did those things, they would be like, this person's actually pretty reasonable. So that is what we're doing here in Washington and in California and around the country.
Yeah, and I love that. Look, I complain a lot about the two-party system. And so while Forward Party is at its infancy, and who knows if it'll get to the point where it'll actually serve to disrupt things, how am I going to fault Andrew Yang for trying, to actually make movement on one of my chief complaints about the state of our political system? And I think he has an interesting point about Seattle. And, even though he is much further to the left than I am and supports some very progressive policies that I do not, he can at least be honest about what's happening in places like Seattle and San Francisco. And he can at least look at that through an honest lens and say, hey, those are places with one-party rule that have had one-party rule forever. And you can't blame those problems on anyone else except the party that is in power and has been in power. So I really admire his intellectual honesty. I had to play this one just kind of funny clip because he brought it up. I didn't even bring up Jay Inslee, okay? I was being a good girl. But of course, Andrew Yang ran for president in 2020, and who else ran for president? Jay Inslee did. And completely unprompted, by the way, Andrew Yang offered his thoughts on Jay Inslee's short-lived presidential campaign.
Oh, I'm going to tell a random story, and he's on the way out, too, just because it's funny.
Okay, go ahead.
You know who ran for president, same cycle I did? Jay Inslee.
Oh, I'm aware.
And man, did that tank. Yeah. I mean, I was there in Iowa watching him speak. And him watching it tank, you could tell he was so like confused. He's like, why am I not winning all these people over? And I had this thing with my campaign staff, but it's like you can tell a lot about a candidate by how they react to Andrew Yang. Because like they joke that I was like the Grim Reaper of candidates. As soon as I passed someone in the polls, like that person disappeared. So among the folks that like frankly could not contain their irritation at me was Jay Inslee.
Well, Governor Inslee's not running for a fourth term, and there's some rumors that he might run for president again. Any advice for him?
I'd be very entertained if he decided to enter the Democratic primary because, you know, like, you know, maybe that's the kind of thing that might have them be like, oh, shoot, like, are we going to have to defend not having a debate?
I thought that was really interesting that he felt like Jay Inslee was really confused why he wasn't doing better and why ultimately Andrew Yang, who entered as a complete political unknown, was gaining more traction than him. Very telling, but I have to say not particularly surprising. And as for whether Jay Inslee is going to run for president again, I've heard rumors. I tend to doubt it. Of course, he wouldn't if Joe Biden is actually going to run. If for some reason the field were to open up, then we could talk about it. But Jay Inslee would never like go in and do like a Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and challenge a sitting Democratic president. So, all right. Mike and I have just done a total overhaul of our insurance just in time to get married. Now you can't get out of it, babe. Now you have to say yes because our insurance is bundled together. And once you do that, there's just no going back. Mike and I did the First Mark Challenge, which is something my friend Dory Monson had talked about on the radio for a long time and how he was able to get great insurance, save money. Mike and I did the First Mark Challenge and we knew going in that we were going to be underinsured. And I'll let Dave Taylor, he's the CEO of First Mark, explain a little bit more about the process. But what I'll say, just generally speaking, is that First Mark Insurance will look at all the insurance coverage that you currently have. They'll talk to you about your needs, what you may need, what you might have that you might not need. And then they'll come back and they'll present you with a proposal and say, hey, here's what you've got. Here's what we recommend. Here's Dave Taylor with First Mark.
We believe and we say that we will help 100% of the people that we work with, okay? Now, that doesn't mean necessarily that 100% of the people we work with are going to become First Mark clients, but we believe that we will actually help 100% of the people, whether that be stay with your current carrier, but let's modify your coverage a bit so you're better protected, or ultimately, hopefully, come over to First Mark. We're going to put you with a different company and give you better coverage, right? So the challenge is really challenging individuals to give us an opportunity to prove that to them. That's really what the First Mark Challenge is.
Yeah. And so when Mike and I went through it, we got better insurance. I mean, we got way more coverage for about the same price. And so it worked out really well for us. And the nice thing about doing the First Mark Challenge is it doesn't cost you anything. The only thing it costs you is time. You don't pay to do the First Mark Challenge to have these experts look over your insurance and see if you've got enough or if you have too much. And even if you become a First Mark customer, you're not paying First Mark for anything. And so there's really no downside except the time commitment of going through all of this with them. And I highly recommend it. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Take the First Mark Challenge like Mike and I did. Protect what you work hard for. And tell them you heard about them on the Undivided Podcast. Okay, let's step outside of Washington State for a moment, because Lord knows we need to today, although outside of Washington State isn't looking much better these days. Down at the southern border, of course, we're awaiting the imminent end of Title 42, which I've said I think is appropriate. I don't think that we should continue to have pandemic era anything. When the pandemic is over, Title 42 was in place to try to stop the flow of people into the country during the pandemic. So I know there are some Republicans who want to keep it because it at least helps a little bit, but I just don't believe in doing that. I just don't think that's intellectually honest or morally consistent. So anyway, it's going to be a disaster. I mean, it is going to be an absolute disaster later this week when Title 42 ends. I had to laugh at this article from Time that popped up on my feed last night. The headline, "Why the U.S. May Be Days Away from a Border Crisis," to which I was like, We've been in a border crisis for a very long time. Now, we're days away from that border crisis absolutely exploding into another level of crisis. But it's like Time Magazine, where have you been? Have you been watching? In the last 10 days, so leading up to the end of Title 42, there has been this huge, tens of thousands of migrants at once flooding to the southern border. U.S. Customs and Border Patrol, this is the article from the New York Post, says at one point 81,000 migrants stopped at the border in the past 10 days. So they were stopped by U.S. Customs and Border Patrol, or they, you know, intentionally turned themselves over to them. But 26,000 snuck in. 26,000 just got by into the country, no issues. And so, and that's what they know of, right? And that's before the end of Title 42. So we're really gearing up for a pretty significant influx. Bill Malusian, who's an awesome border correspondent for Fox News, he sent out a tweet that I thought was a really good kind of visual to understand, like, hey, what happened here? He wrote, the Border Patrols is reporting that there were about 18,600 known gotaways, and that number obviously increased over time, at the border last week. He said that's a concerning number. That means a population size equivalent to approximately a full capacity AT&T center where the San Antonio Spurs play. That many people were able to sneak into the U.S. without capture in a single week. So think about that. Full capacity AT&T center worth of migrants in a single week who were able to sneak in to the United States. That is absolutely insane. So I will note, we're going to have our friend Ali Bradley, who is a border correspondent for News Nation, on the show tomorrow to talk about, I mean, she is in the thick of it, what is going to happen, what that means for the rest of the country, where all these people are going to go. I was looking at some video from our friend Julio Rosas, who reports for Town Hall, who's been down in El Paso for townhall.com. And he says, you know, there's these giant migrant camps set up all over. He said the size of the camps and the conditions are worse than when he was down there in December covering a similar surge. So what he's seeing in anticipation of Thursday is that this is going to be like unlike anything these border towns have seen. And you really have to feel for these border communities. Imagine living in El Paso, and I've been down to the border outside of El Paso. El Paso's not a giant city. It doesn't have the infrastructure for all of this. And then you have much smaller cities all around the southern border in border states who are simply not getting the help they need, don't have the resources they need to deal with this. And so, you guys, Thursday is going to be an insane day for our country and a true test of the Biden administration, of the border czar, Kamala Harris. I mean, Biden's sending, I think, 1,500 National Guard troops. He might even be sending more than that, but I think 1,500 initially. And so we'll see what happens. I mean, you can't process that many people. You can't even process that many people. And the number of people they're going to release into the interior of the country who haven't been properly vetted, who we don't know who they are. I don't understand why it's a partisan issue to be concerned about that. Like, since when is the United States, are we just okay with like, oh yeah, anybody come in and we won't track you. We don't know where you are. We don't know who you are, what you've done. That's just insane to me. And it's, you know, the left wants to say, oh, well, we're really sympathetic for all these people because they're all, you know, migrants seeking asylum. That's just not true. Do some of them have legitimate asylum claims? Yes. But when you look at some of the videos of these people coming across, some of them are like young kids, like dressed hip. And like, yeah, is the United States better than the country they're coming from? Probably. But like when I think of people fleeing like for asylum, I think of like, you know, people just like, I don't want to say like raggedy coming across the border, but like people who are in life or death situations in the countries they're coming from. We have an avenue for them to come to the U.S. if they have a legitimate asylum claim. But you can't tell me that tens of thousands of people in 1 week have legitimate asylum claims coming into the U.S. It's absolutely ridiculous. All right. So yeah, we'll hear from Ali Bradley tomorrow, which I think will be good. I want to play a clip from an interview I did for the Crosscut Festival. You guys might recall that I was asked to moderate a conversation with former Texas Congressman Will Hurd, who's a Republican. There's some rumors about maybe he's going to run in 2024. And I thought it was interesting to play this right now in talking about the border because he did represent a Texas congressional district. And obviously they dealt with this issue in a very real way. And we were kind of talking about what stops the two parties from coming together to fix this. You know, the humanitarian side of it, the border security side of it. And he talked about how, you know, it's hard sometimes for people to message in a way that they feel like isn't going to get them maybe attacked by a certain part of their voting base.
Part of this is people are afraid. Right? I think oftentimes there's many Republicans that agree with me on the things that I say, but they're afraid to say it out loud because they don't want, you know, because of hyper-partisanship. If the first thing out of your mouth is not a complete and total rebuke of the other side's crazy idea, they're afraid that they're going to be tarnished by that particular issue, right? And so, you know, you see it in so many of these issues that we're talking about now. You see it in immigration, right? Nobody wants to talk about, you know, straightforward common sense immigration rules because they're afraid they're gonna be like, someone's gonna say I support amnesty. Like, just because you want to streamline legal immigration and do all these other things that we should be doing does not mean you support amnesty, right? And so oftentimes, I think too many Republicans are afraid that having a nuanced position may look at it as an acceptance of the crazy other person's position. So they harden their response to these topics.
Yeah. And I think, again, that just goes back to the two-party system being very dysfunctional. And, you know, I think a lot about the issue of Dreamers, which there's bipartisan consensus that Dreamers, children who were brought to the U.S., through no fault of their own, you know, should be, for all intents and purposes, you know, regular American citizens with the same freedoms and everything that the rest of us have. Yet both parties use them as political pawns. Democrats have done it. Republicans have done it. Pawns to get something else that they want. And so as long as you have these two parties in their silos where they're not willing to give an inch because they're worried about political implications, et cetera, that's how we end up with a border crisis as bad as it is, period. I mean, it is insane that you don't have leaders from both parties down like arm in arm at the southern border working together to solve this. If that isn't an indictment of our current political system, I don't know what is. All right. I've been doing ads for what? Five months for the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. And I hear from so many of you who have started the program and got great results. And one of our awesome listeners said I could share his story today. Can we do that, Nicole? So
absolutely.
His name is Ben Bailey, and he is down. He lost 15% of his body weight in 8 weeks. We'll show a picture here for people who are watching. Look how good he looks. I love that the before picture he chose, if you're not watching, he's like cooking bacon. And the second one, he's standing there all studly looking. I mean, looking absolutely amazing. He wrote us, "This is a lifestyle change, not a diet. What an incredible journey of discovery and developing new eating habits, a better understanding of nutrition and body physiology. Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at Eastside Weight Loss Clinic developed a nutrition plan, an easy to follow framework that just works. If you follow the program, you will see results. My results were amazing. I lost 15% of my body weight in 8 weeks. I don't feel hungry and the physical benefits are incredible." That's awesome. Ben, Nicole, you join me for a... I love hearing that. That makes me so happy. And if you guys have started the program and you also want to send me a little before and after or a little blurb that I can read on the podcast, would love it. Ben says, give Eastside Weight Loss Clinic a call. It will change your life in 8 weeks. So if you want to try the program like I have, like Ben has, visit eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com. And just schedule a free 15-minute consultation. It's easy. There's a link. It takes you to a little calendar. You pick your 15-minute time slot, and then you can talk to Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team about the program and about whether it's right for you and the goals that you have for yourself. But I'm down 35 or 6 pounds. And I'm just feeling great. Yeah. Good job, Ben. I thought that was so cute that he let us use that. Okay, let's get some questions from the live stream, shall we? I just got another accusation of racism. Nicole.
Oh, no.
Oh, I'll just read it. It's from the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party.
Really?
Yep. She says, who, by the way... They chose such a fringe activist to be the new chair of the Washington State Democratic Party. She actually endorsed and supported Nicole Thomas Kennedy for Seattle City Attorney. unabashedly. The one who called cops serial killers, celebrated arson, like the arson of trailer construction trailers at the youth jail. Yeah, so Shasti Conrad, let's just say that your opinion doesn't mean a whole lot to me, given your support of actually dangerous political candidates simply because of the letter next to their name. But yeah, she said, wrote, aside from their ethnicity and gender being the same, as far as I know, Shama is not a former prosecutor, a former state legislator, or a state legislature, or a Democrat. Maybe ask your former King County council rep, Kathy Lambert, for some tips on avoiding racist messaging before you hit the send tweet next time, Brandy, which I think she's referring to like a flyer that Kathy got raked over the coals for. The difference is that I'm not running a political campaign, so I don't feel compelled to apologize for something that wasn't intended to be racist and that I don't think is racist. Because I don't think just because people have the same skin color that I can't compare their politics, as I alluded to earlier. And even though Shama Sawant is not a former prosecutor, not a state legislature, not a Democrat, I think anyone who is reading my comparison, who cared to reflect on it honestly and not be obtuse about it, realize what I was saying is they both have a disdain for the current system as it operates. And I think Shama Sawant being in that job is just the same as Monica Dingra being in that job. And Shasti Conrad, you can say it's racist, but again, you supported Nicole Thomas Kennedy's campaign. And so you're not even fit to be in the job that you're in. And so I'm just not too concerned about that. But anyway, okay. Comments from the stream today. Austin says, the easiest way to discredit anyone is to call them a racist. Sad. We're going to talk about that in the closing sanity check today, by the way. Deborah writes, in fairness, decisions about law and order are often based on emotion. So she's really not wrong. However, data, and this is referring to Monica Dingra, saying if we supported a police pursuit fix, we were being emotional. However, data can be manipulated to meet the desired narrative, which is not acceptable. And we've seen so much of that. And that's like when people are talking about data-driven, I'm like, but what data? And is it accurate? And does it have an agenda? And it's sad that we're at that point where we have to really question the agenda of data and numbers and what used to be fact-based. Let me see here. Aaron on the tweet blaming me for mass shootings because I compared two women of the same skin color. Aaron says, Rebecca's tweet epitomizes why she and Moms Demand Action, apparently that woman was part of a group called Moms Demand Action, can't be taken seriously. That woman's arguments are based in absolute nonsense, absent of sound logic and reason. Will you look up what Moms Demand Action is? Chris writes on Patreon, the only way to prove you're not a racist is to vote for the candidates with a D next to their name. I mean, they said as much. If you don't know who to vote for, you're not black. Yeah, that's what Biden said. Kyle writes on Patreon, Monica Dingra sounds like she's going to replace Jay as the new data daddy. I should be careful. Somebody might think my comparison is racist. No, I think you're okay because Jay's white, so you can compare her to Jay Inslee. Dan, Brandy, thank you for making all these strong points against Dingra. I hope you can also include all of these points in a written piece for your viewers to share them with others. I actually do plan to do that. I have a story I'm working on right now. Stacy writes, don't have to use, so about, this is about Claire McCaskill, the senator, saying that Jesus would not support assault weapons for personal use. Stacy writes, don't have to use the Lord's name in political conversation to stand true to values and beliefs in politics. Exactly. You can, you know, have your value in your belief system, I think, that guides your policy preferences. But again, I don't think that your religion explicitly should be used to craft laws that might be, that would be forced on other people who don't share your religion. I just don't think that that's the way our American political system is supposed to work. DC writes of the border crisis, such a slap in the face to me and my family who came here legally. We waited 2 years, paid fees, and passed our citizenship test, which I don't even know if I could pass those citizenship tests. We should try it. We should both take the citizenship test and share.
Set us up for failure.
No, we'll share our results.
Okay.
All right. Why have a proper process if this is permitted? And I think that's very true, is there are a lot of people who have become U.S. citizens the right way. And yeah, it's not an overnight process. It does take some time, but there's a reason for that. And I think when you look at people who might be waiting, they'd think, why wouldn't I just, you know, take a plane into Mexico and come up with these tens of thousands of people? I mean, it's hard, though. I mean, you'd be living kind of off the grid in a way, unless you come to a state like Washington, where they're just kind of like give you everything you need. So that's tough. And DC, I feel bad. I mean, yeah, you paid the fees, you did everything you needed to do, and then people are just pouring across the southern border. Aaron writes about the Forward Party and Andrew Yang. He writes, "The Forward Party is fascinating. I loved the idea at first glance. As I've watched over the past several months, the idea is lost on me. The party is an oppositional force only. They have no policy positions. They have no platform for candidates to stand on. Forward is a direction. That's not a vision or an outcome. In politics, the debate is rarely about the key desired outcomes. It's about how you plan to attain the desired outcome. Unfortunately, Forward doesn't offer anything about how they'll move forward." I agree and disagree. You're right. Forward Party doesn't have a platform that has to do with policy positions. And part of the reason why is they, you know, have people across the ideological spectrum in Forward Party. So in that sense, Forward Party is about sort of a movement to try to disrupt the current system. And it's a different kind of way to form or think about a political party, because usually your political party is based on your policy platform. But who says a political party can't be based on a movement, like a movement to disrupt the existing two parties? I think it's an interesting concept. And again, if he, you know, and you should listen to my interview with Andrew Yang. You can go to undividedpod.com, and sign up to get access to all of our Sundays with subscriber episodes. But we talked about kind of the idea of, you know, them not having a policy platform position and how that influences things. But I like the idea of, you know, trying to disrupt it in even the slightest way. So one of the things Andrew Yang was saying is they would need the Forward Party to get 3 senators elected to have basically full control over the U.S. Senate. Because look at, like, the control that Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema have, because they can be kind of swing votes. So everybody's trying to cater to what they want to get their votes. And so I think if you can have some sort of even slight disruption in cities like Seattle, where one-party rule has failed us, isn't that worth exploring? And Forward Party, it sounds like, is made up of people who believe the two-party system needs to sort of be disrupted, and who believe that you can get along with people who aren't exactly ideologically aligned with you. And not only can you do that, we must do that as a country. So I like the idea. I mean, am I going to go out and become a member of the Forward Party? No. But I think it's an interesting idea nonetheless. Okay, let's close the show with a little sanity check, shall we? So I want to go back to what we opened the show with, which is, oops, I did it again. I found out that I found out a lot of things on Twitter. I found out I'm a transphobe, according to Twitter. Found out now I'm racist and I'm responsible for mass shootings. I mean, all sorts of things. And look, in all seriousness, one of the hardest things for anyone is to feel misunderstood. I have spent much of my career feeling misunderstood. And eventually, when you do the kind of job that I have, you just come to recognize that that's part of it. That the only people who really truly know you are the people who are closest to you, and of course all of our undivided subscribers and dear fans of the show who know that I'm not a racist or a transphobe or someone who's responsible for terrible acts of violence. And, you know, I can get to a place where I'm okay being misunderstood by people who I know don't know me, right? But, you know, this whole thing about constantly being called racist or transphobic, it again is a good opportunity to remind you of what we're trying to do with this show and trying to get not just me, you know, in my job with a microphone in front of me and a platform to be able to speak truths, but to try to encourage you to do the same thing and to not worry or not fear the potential consequences. Because those sorts of labels, transphobe, racist, you know, right wing, white supremacist, often those are labels used very loosely, and they're used to try to shut you up. We've talked about that a million times. And it can be, I understand, it can be a terrifying thing for a private citizen to risk speaking up and then have their life potentially ruined, have someone call you a racist and call your employer. But that is the way that the fringe tries to maintain control of the conversation and control of our country and control of our cities, is they've made it so scary, such a frightening proposition for reasonable people to speak up for fear of what the consequences might be, that they're able to maintain control in a way that is not commensurate with their numbers, because we outnumber them by far. So I hope you can take some inspiration from my lack of care or concern that the Twitterati thinks I'm racist or a transphobe or whatever it is. I hope that you can take some inspiration from that in your own life to the extent that you're willing. Find your voice, speak truth, and try every day to care a little less about what the consequences of doing that might be. And that has been your sanity check for today. And that has been today's episode of Undivided. Nicole, I feel like I barely talked to you today.
Yeah, but the show flew by. It really did.
You were sitting over there just typing away, and I was like, I don't know what she's doing. I don't want to disrupt her.
Those are comments.
Now, it's important to get to the bottom of who is to blame for the technical issues yesterday.
Oh, geez.
Now, it was half and half.
Yes, it was. Well, yeah, I mean, it's too technical to explain.
I had reset some settings, forgot about it, and then Nicole responded by muting everything.
Yes, pretty much.
So it's both of our fault, 50-50. You see how that, what are you going to say? What is it?
Well, I mean, I feel like it's mine. I could have figured it out sooner, but yeah, I can't test things while we're alive, so I can't really troubleshoot.
That's right. So. You know, I did a poll. So on YouTube, I do a little poll leading into the episode, and I said, are our video clips going to work today? And like 12% of you said no.
Ouch.
I was like, why are you guys trying to put your negative energy on us?
Whatever.
Yeah. The other poll was, does the Ford party interest you? 57% said yes. 43% said no. That's actually a pretty equal split. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you know what? In the can. Good job today,
yep.
Nicole.
Nice
Thank
work,
you.
Brandy.
If you would like to become a subscriber to the show, we would love to have you. We can't do this show full time without you. You know, support the show so I can continue to do this job and be called racist every day. It's my dream, right? UndividedPod.com. Why do I do this to myself?
I hope nobody takes a transcript from our show and does anything with it.
Why do I do this to myself? Is there no job I can do where I won't be called racist every day? There has to be one. UndividedPod.com. Visit UndividedPod.com. You can find out how to watch clips from the show, listen to the podcast, contact Nicole and I with hot story tips or leads, and you can find out how to support the show and become a subscriber for as little as $5 a month. So I hope all of you who have not finally decide to take the leap. In the meantime, I'll see you back on the live show tomorrow. Oops, I did it again.